The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day 5 of this Rohatsu 2014 Sesshin here at Mountain Gate in northern New Mexico. And I will continue offering the commentaries that great Zen Master Hakuin, Japanese Zen Master Hakuin, gave to his students during the Rohatsu Sesshin in his small temple in Japan. Hakuin came to practice as a child, really, because he seems to have had a conscience and some level of anxiety about going to hell. In fact, a fair amount of anxiety about going to hell, because his mother, who was a devout Buddhist, although not a Zen Buddhist, had taken him to a Nichiren talk by a Nichiren priest who was extolling the details of the Buddhist hells. And this really put a great deal of terror into this young boy. He was something like 11 years old at the time. And then to top it off, one day, not long after that, when the maid was making the Japanese bath, which of course is a very big, well, not so big, it's a big tub. In those days, a wooden tub with a fire built in a firebox underneath to heat the water. And the maid got it a little bit overheated, and it actually started bubbling. And Hakuin, who was about to go in and take a bath, was terrified because it reminded him of the details of the hells that the Nichiren priest had outlined in the talk that he had heard not long before that. And he demanded that his mother tell him how he could avoid going to hell. And she said, you know, I'm not going to tell you right now. Not in this room. The bathroom is a dirty place, so you wait till you get all nice and clean, and I'll tell you later. And so he went ahead and took his bath, and then he pestered his mother for the answer, and she sort of hemmed and hawed about things, and he felt that she really didn't know how he could avoid going into hell. And finally she said, you were born on a particular day, which was the anniversary day or the honoring day of one of the Shinto gods. And as long as you venerate that god, you will be saved from hell. And so for quite a while afterwards, young Hakuin set up an altar to the god of the shrine and did chants and offered incense and so on. And at one point he began to doubt whether it really might be as effective as his mother had promised him it would be. And so he thought to himself, I'm going to light a stick of incense. And if the smoke rises straight up, then I will know that what she said was true. But if it doesn't, then I will realize that there is no protection at all from I think it was the god Tenmu, but I'm not sure at this point. And so he closed his eyes after he lit the stick of incense. And then a moment later he opened his eyes, and the smoke was indeed going straight up. But then a waft of air came along and the smoke started going in all directions. And his heart sank with it. At some point he discovered Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of compassion, and even went up on a hillside behind his house where there was a rock that had a sort of a shape of Kuan Yin, and he actually carved into it to make it look like Kuan Yin. And he sat there, taught himself how to do Zazen apparently, and sat there. This is when he was 12, 13 years old. And when he was 13, he begged his parents to allow him to become a Buddhist monk because he got the impression after another demonstration that his mother had taken him to, this one was a supposed reenactment of a punishment that was handed down on a Zen Buddhist, or at least a Buddhist priest, which consisted of a white hot iron pot being placed on his head to torture him. And in the reenactment, the so-called priest just stood there calmly as this incredibly hot boiling pot was placed over his head. And so that brought Hakuin to the conclusion that if he became a Buddhist priest, he could escape hell. And so he begged his parents to allow him to become ordained. And finally, when he was 14, they relented. And he was ordained, I think possibly by his uncle, and then sent to a monastery or sent to another temple to do some training. It was not a Zen temple. He didn't get to Zen until some years later. When he actually did start doing Zazen, I think he was with the priest he was with possibly the first time, possibly about 4 years, studying sutras. And then he went to where he could learn Zazen. And at that point in time, when he was about 19 years old, he heard a talk by a priest in which he spoke of the murder of Ganto. Ganto was a deeply realized Chinese master who actually had come to awakening relatively early in life. And he's often paired with Seppo, his Dharma brother, who took a very much longer time to come to awakening, but eventually became a very, very fine teacher in his own right. At the time these two men lived in China, there was a great deal of violence. There were brigands running around robbing and murdering people. It was a pretty rough time, not so different perhaps from some countries in this day and age, particularly in the Middle East, where life hangs by a thread. And so the story of Ganto is that he actually served as a ferryman. He didn't have his own temple that we know about, at least it's not obvious in any of the stories that I've read or heard. And he simply operated as a ferry boat driver, if you call it that, ferrying people back and forth across the river. And now this could have also been a metaphor, because ferrying people across from delusion to awakening is something that that Zen teachers are tasked with doing. The only problem with that is that awakening is right here on this shore, and the Zen teacher can point the way, but cannot do it for the student. At any rate, Ganto was murdered, run through with a sword when he was something like 53 years old by bandits. And the story goes that when he was skewered, he screamed so loud that his cries were heard for 3 leagues, which is a great deal of distance. And when Hakuin heard that, once more his heart sank. How could somebody as deeply enlightened as Ganto have screamed like that when he was murdered? And so he became quite disenchanted with Zen practice and actually left it for a while, apprenticed himself to a calligrapher. He decided that he would become a calligrapher, and a calligrapher he eventually did become, actually, But he was only training with this master calligrapher for some months before he realized that, as far as he could tell, he would never become a success as a calligrapher. Ironically, he's a huge success now, several hundred years later, and expressed an amazing variety of styles in his calligraphy. He was tremendously productive. Many, many, many scrolls, some just plain calligraphies, some with paintings, often of Kuan Yin, bearing his face, because he felt such an affinity with Kuan Yin. Eventually, of course, he had awakening experiences, did serious, intensive, challenging, difficult training under Dokyo Eitan Zenji, who he is considered the Dharma heir of, the only Dharma heir, I believe, because Dokyo Eitan had another monk who would have become his successor, but that monk died young, and what was left was Hagwin, because Dokyo Eitan died just a few years after Hagwin left him. He was already older when Hagwin went to him. And eventually, Hagwin went back to his family temple, Shoinji, in Ohara, in Hara, Japan, near the Japan Sea, near the Inland Sea, I should say, not the Japan Sea, near the Inland Sea, and within sight of Mount Fuji. The temple still exists. It still has people sitting there doing zazen. It has wonderful energy in the zendo. And if you ever get a chance, go there. It takes a number of different trains to get there from any of the larger cities like Kyoto or Tokyo. But you can get there without too much of a trouble. So, the fifth night, and here we are in the well through the fifth day of this Sesshin. Not that much time left, but it's been going very strongly. It's important to keep up that digging, keep up that difficult work of opening the mind to the point where one can see so clearly that one has a Kensho experience. So reading his talk on the fifth night. This is by translation by Norman Waddell, who is the most excellent translator of Hagwin. And by the way, the language has changed enough, even though Hagwin wrote in the vernacular Japanese, unlike some priests of his era, who, as a result of a lot of the Buddhist training originally coming from China, through the hands of either Chinese priests coming to Japan or Japanese monks going to China and studying with the Chinese masters. And because in those days the written language was pretty much identical, it was possible to communicate in writing, even if they didn't know each other's language, spoken language. Nowadays, both languages have been, quote, simplified, close quotes, the written languages, and so it's not so easy to go between the two. But a great deal of Japanese written language still can be probably pretty much read, or a lot of it read by a Chinese. So because of that, most Buddhist priests wrote in Chinese when they were writing things of the Dharma. But Hagwin chose, although apparently some of it was written in Chinese, he did most of his work in the colloquial Japanese of his era. And that has changed enough that it requires translation to be read in modern Japanese. And so for Norman Waddell to translate Hawking is a two-stage process. First, Professor Yoshizawa translates from Hawking's era Japanese to modern Japanese, and then Norman takes the modern Japanese translation and turns it into English and does a very good job of it. So here is Hawking's commentary, or not commentary, his talk to his students on the fifth night. The master said, intensive training sessions known as Sesshin continue for periods of 80, 90, and 120 days. Since the goal of all these who take part is to clarify the great matter, while the Sesshin is in progress, no one leaves the temple gates and no one speaks unnecessarily. Practice is carried on with a spirit of dauntless, indomitable courage. In recent years, there was a man in a village near here who carved a stone image of Fudo the Immovable. He enshrined it beside a waterfall in the mountains of Yoshiwara. One day, as he was watching the water tumbling down the cliffside, his gaze fixed on the bubbles that formed in the pool at the foot of the falls. Some moved over the water for a foot or so before disappearing, and some for 2 or 3 feet. And some continued floating 2 or 3 yards. Watching their progress, the man's past karma enabled him to perceive the impermanence of worldly existence. The realization shook him to the marrow of his being. He now found it impossible to find peace within himself. He chanced to hear a man recite a passage from the Dharma words of priest Takusui. Quote, courageous beings attain Buddhahood in a single instant of thought. Lax and indolent beings take 3 long kalpas to attain nirvana. A great burning determination rose in him. He entered the bathing room and shut the door behind him. Sitting down, he straightened his spine, clenched his fists, opened his eyes wide, and began doing zazen with great determination. Delusory thoughts flew thick and fast through his mind. The obstructions of the demon realms rose up to confuse him. But because he threw himself body and soul into the great Dharma battle, he finally severed life at the roots and entered into the formless realm of deep samadhi. At first light, hearing the sparrows chirping around outside the building, he found that the body had completely disappeared. Suddenly, he saw his eyeballs pop from their sockets and fall to the ground. He felt the pain of his fingernails gouging into the palms of his hands and realized his eyes were back in their proper place. He rose from his cushion and began to walk about. He continued to practice in the same manner for 3 nights. And on the 3rd night, when daybreak came and he got up to wash his face, he noticed that the trees in the garden were now somehow totally different. He consulted the priest of a nearby temple about it, but the priest was unable to provide any answers. He then decided to come and see me. He set out for Shoinji in palanquin. Upon reaching the high pass at Sata, the splendid prospect of the ocean at Kaura came into view far below. And at that instant, he knew beyond any doubt that what he had grasped was the truth that plants and trees and the great earth all attain Buddhahood. Proceeding to my temple, he passed through the fires of my forge and subsequently penetrated a number of koan barriers. He was an ordinary man with no prior knowledge of Zen practice whatever. Yet, in just 2 or 3 short nights, he achieved a realization. The great victory he gained in the struggle against illusory thought was the result of courageous determination and single-minded resolve. How can you, full-fledged Zen monks, fail to generate the same fierce and dauntless spirit? Is what he wrote on the or what he spoke on the 5th night. So let's go through it a little bit. The master said, intensive training sessions known as Sesshin continue for periods of 80, 90, and 120 days. Sesshin, the characters, 2 characters that make up that word, can be translated as to touch the mind. To touch the mind. And that is what we are doing. We are opening to our mind. We grow up usually assuming a lot about life, about who we are, about our relationship to others, and so on and so forth. And we develop a self-image out of that gradually and tenaciously. But who are we really? This self-image, how real is it? To touch the mind, this is where we will find our answers. In the old days, the training periods, or sesshin, were 80, 90, or 120 days. Nowadays, we have two things going on. There are what we call sesshin and what are generally called sesshin in Japan, which are 7 days, or in the case of Rohatsu, 7 nights and 8 days. Generally, Rohatsu ends on the 8th morning. And but at the same time, at temples, at Japanese Zen temples, there are training periods that go much longer than that. And during a given training period, there may be several sesshin. At Sogenji, there are 2 training periods a year, one from February to August and the other from August to February. So there really is no time at Sogenji when there's not a training period in full force. And the training is intensive there, more intensive than anywhere else in the world, really. And to great benefit. We try to emulate some of that here at Mountain Gate by having, for example, our November sesshin and our Rohatsu close together with only a few days in between. And the same thing in March or March-April with 2 sesshin also in very close proximity. And when a person does both sesshin, it offers a great deal of benefit because you don't lose the depth that you gained in the first sesshin because you're almost immediately going into a second sesshin and taking it even deeper. And at Sogenji, there are 3 in a row this time of year, but we can't do that here at Mountain Gate because most people in the West have jobs and can't get that kind of time off. Since Western Zen practice is, by and large, mostly lay practice. Since the goal of all those who take part is to clarify the great matter, and that great matter being that of birth and death, what is it all about? Why do we get born? What happens when we die? Where did we come from before we were born? What is life all about? While the sesshin is in progress, no one leaves the temple gates and no one speaks unnecessarily. Practice is carried on with a spirit of dauntless, indomitable courage. And dauntless, indomitable courage is what we really need to apply in our Zazen, because if we don't have that level of commitment, we're going to be easily led astray and easily get discouraged and easily quit. And yet, to be able to continue to open and to open further and to open further than that is the most amazing gift offered to human beings. The freedom, the only true freedom there is, the freedom that does not depend on whether we have bars in front of us or locks on the doors, the freedom of our own mind, the freedom to be in any circumstance, no matter how difficult or painful, without being pulled around by it, to be free even within the midst of it. As was demonstrated by Jacques Le Serran in Buchenwald, and also by the people who had Kensho experiences, awakening experience in the Gulag, in the political prisons in Siberia, of Soviet Stalinist Russia, and at other times as well. As we begin to touch the mind through our Zazen, we open to whatever might be stored away there. And what is stored away is experiences, assumptions, ideas, images, pictures we saw in magazines and movies,